Affairs Democratic Talk Radio is sponsored in part by www.algoreisourpresident.com. AlGoreIsOurPresident.com is a sponsor of Democratic Talk Radio, not because the election was a close one, nor because Al Gore didn't prevail, or even because we are unhappy with the Republican administration, which we are. Rather, we are a sponsor because we believe Al Gore did win both the popular vote and the electorate. This rightful victory was denied, however, as the final tally of votes was circumvented by the Supreme Court, when they halted the legal hand count, thus giving the White House to their own personal choice for president. Democracy was dealt a terrible blow. Our goal is a simple one, to be a positive voice for those who support our truly elected president, Al Gore, to share articles, full motion campaign video, some great downloads, and a few laughs, to help us remember our president and the positive things he would have worked so hard to accomplish for us. We also offer a full line of re-elect Gore in 2004 merchandise items to keep a future Al Gore presidential run both visible and tangible, like t-shirts, bumper stickers, pins, and much, much more to come. Please visit us at www.algoreisourpresident.com. Our website, as well as the Democratic Talk Radio website, was designed by Accent Design Studios, which can be reached at www.accentdesign.com. AlGoreIsOurPresident.com wishes to thank them and you for your support of our site and all Democratic efforts wherever they may be.
And welcome to Democratic Talk Radio. My name is Al Lawrence with my co-host,
Stephen Crockett.
All right, here we are again for another Saturday evening, and thank you for joining us here on Democratic Talk Radio. Well, Steve, we have, of course, as I always say, an awful lot to talk about on this Saturday.
Sure, a lot of events happening in Tennessee and locally, too.
Right, in fact, that's where we're going to start off. We're going to start off with some local events. Coming up locally here, it is the 19th day of January. And on the 21st, of course, is Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s birthday. We're having a big celebration here in Fayetteville, Tennessee. We're having a celebration march, and we're starting one of the churches just off of the Fayetteville Square, and we're going to be marching around to the Fayetteville Square and onto the gazebo and the courthouse lawn, where our county officials will make a few speeches, and then we'll continue the march down Main Street to the St. Paul AME Church. We're looking for a big voter registration drive, and we're just going to be celebrating all the great things that Dr. Martin Luther King stood for. And anybody in the local area that's listening to us this evening, we, of course, will be looking for you. And that's at 10 o'clock Monday morning, so we'll start meeting about 9:30 at the Mount Zion Missionary Baptist Church on West Maple Street here in Fayetteville.
Yeah, sure. We hope a lot of Democrats will come out and support.
That's right. And everybody. We want everybody out there. It's a community thing, and, of course, we want to see lots of good Democrats out there as well.
Exactly.
All right. And also, coming up next Saturday here locally, we have a couple of the local events we want to tell you about, is our local Democratic Party meeting with our great Lincoln County Chairperson, Brenda Abel. She'll be heading the event, but we're going to have a special guest on that day, State Senator Lincoln Davis, who is running for the 4th Congressional District, Van Hillary's seat.
He's a good Democrat, too, Lincoln.
Yeah, Lincoln Davis, great, a good Democrat, and we'll be looking forward
and
to talking to him.
Mm-hmm. And a very great speaker. We've heard him speak up at McMinnville.
Right, that's right. We were up in McMinnville, Tennessee, earlier, or late last year, actually. And
For the Warren County Democratic Party had an event, and we heard Lincoln speak there.
And he'll be here this coming Saturday on the 26th, and we're looking forward to talking to him. And we're going to, hopefully now, I've already talked to his office, but we're going to be having an interview with Lincoln Davis, and we'll be able to broadcast that here on Democratic Talk Radio.
That'd be great.
Yeah, looking forward to that. Also, a very, very large event coming up in February. Steve's going to tell you about that.
Sure. Actually, in Nashville, Al Gore will be speaking. There's a fundraiser up there in Nashville on February 2nd, which is a Saturday. And if you all want to attend, this is not like those ones where you have to pay, you know, $10,000 to do a dinner with Cheney or with Bush. You don't have to be a corporate CEO.
This is
or
Democrats here.
Right. This is not, you don't have to be an Enron style contributor.
I think it's one rung up from the chili and beans dinners, isn't it?
Yes, it is. It's, it's $25 a person.
Okay.
And I called Al Gore's office in Nashville, and I spoke with the gentleman running that, and he has made this arrangement. If you all, and folks from Democrats from Lincoln County, want to get together for a group photo at the event, he's going to do a group photo. So if you want your picture with Al Gore, come to the event, and we're going to get a big photo made, and we're going to give it to the Huntsville Times, you know, to Kay Campbell. Maybe she can run it. Mm-hmm. And if not, and also we're giving it to Lucy Carter for the Elk Valley Times.
Looking forward to that event, Stephen, with great anticipation.
Yeah, $25 to meet Al Gore. That's great.
I hope I get the opportunity to meet the truly elected president of our country,
right.
Al Gore.
The man the people voted for president.
That's right.
Okay.
The guy who got the most votes.
And if you all need tickets, you can call the Tennessee Democratic Party in Nashville. The number is 615-327-9779. Again, that's 615-327-9779. I'm also sure that Brenda or someone from the local party will be...
Right. Brenda Abels, our local Democratic chairperson.
Yeah, and if you want more information, come to the county meeting here Saturday.
Noon, VFW building, right over here on the Pulaski Highway.
Right, exactly.
Right. Okay, and looking forward to that event. Can't wait. February 2nd, circle that day in your calendar. In fact, folks, get a ticket.
Yeah.
There's going to be a lot of folks there, a lot of your friends there, fellow Democrats just like you and us, that want to take back this country from the interests of this right-wing Republican leadership that's just, boy, putting all kinds of things down the pike here domestically.
Right. Well, let's go move on to a little bit of our national stuff.
Okay, well, before we get too far into our national stuff, but it is all about national stuff, I also want to tell our listeners about, you know, for those, Steve and I mentioned this last week, we have a brand new column that Steve and I have gotten started, and it's currently running in the Sparta, Tennessee Expositor.
Yeah.
And it's called Democratic Voices, and we would love for you to, of course, buy that paper.
Yeah.
Buy lots of copies of that paper.
You can read it online.
Read it online.
And you can read our old columns online, too.
Right. You can read all the columns that we have there with that paper. And we're just...
You're going to read the most recent one now?
I sure am. And that's just what I was getting ready to do, Steve. We're
gonna, cool.
Our most recent one is called Bush Scandals. And they're growing in numbers. And here is the article. There's growing evidence that America needs to reinstitute federal special independent prosecutors. Growing indications of scandals that may reach into the highest levels of the Bush administration show an immediate need for this action. The special independent prosecutor programs were dropped late in the Clinton presidency. During the Clinton years, Ken Starr turned the institution into a mockery of justice and a partisan tool to promote republicanism. With Ken Starr, we had a bad prosecutor instead of a bad legal institution. Both Democrats and Republicans threw the baby out with the bathwater. Democrats wanted the non-scandals of the Whitewater investigation and the Monica Gate to never occur again. Republicans never wanted Democrats to have the ability to do to them what they did to Clinton. For Democrats, it was principle. For Republicans, it was tactics. Unfortunately, we now have no independent way to search for the truth and punish corrupt government officeholders that is outside of the political control of those very same corrupt government officeholders. The Bush administration has many possibly illegal and definitely questionable activities that should be examined by independent special prosecutors. We are briefly going to discuss several in this column. More potential scandals will be discussed in future columns. The Enron collapse and Enron's influence on the White House energy policy has been the subject of extensive questioning since the beginning of the Bush administration. There's a Reuters story that appeared in the Daily News on January the 8th, and all you have to do is go to... https://nm/2002/0108/pl/utilities/low/enron/cheney/dc1.hotmail. Well, anyways, it's entitled Enron Reps Met Six Times with Cheney or His Staff. Cheney has been refusing to release to the General Accounting Office the list of which oil company executives his staff met with while designing the Bush administration's energy policy since early 2001. Democratic congressmen have been requesting the information via the General Accounting Office. Enron has been a huge source of campaign donations to George W. Bush and the Republican Party. Donations to Republican causes by Enron are nearly four times larger than to Democrats. Robert Scheer, who wrote several brilliant pieces in the Los Angeles Times on the Enron-Bush ties on December the 11th, 2001, he wrote, connect the Enron dots to Bush. On January the 2nd of this year, he wrote, Enron is a cancer on the presidency. Both can be read at the Los Angeles Times website. Edward B. Winslow ran a story on the alternet.org website on January the 2nd, 2002, titled Bush's Enron Ties. He details the White House role in stopping the federal government from exercising regulatory duties concerning electricity price gouging in California by Enron and Enron's utilization of its 847 offshore subsidiaries in countries with lax banking regulation laws. And we're going to be talking more about that a little bit later on, too. But Wilson also documents the role of the Republican U.S. investors, workers, Winslow also documents the role of Republican U.S. Senator Phil Graham of Texas in the Enron scandal. Investors, workers, stockholders, and consumers all lost billions in the collapse of Enron. The top executives and the Republican politicians who continue to provide their political cover profiled will pursue this subject in much greater detail as the events continue to develop. The latest potential scandal concerns a French book by Jean-Charles Brissard and Guillaume Dasqui Bin Laden. It's called Bin Laden, The Forbidden Truth. The authors are noted intelligence experts. Brissard wrote a report in 1997 for the French Secret Services on Al-Qaeda. Dasqui, I believe is how that's pronounced, is the publisher of Intelligent Online and an investigative reporter. The book details the close background of the Bush White House to Big Oil. They write about Vice President Cheney being president of the oil industry service company called Halliburton. They note that National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice was a manager for Chevron, and they state that Secretary of Commerce Evans and Secretary of Energy Abraham both worked for U.S. oil companies. Brissard and Dasqui contend that the Bush administration crippled the war on terrorism before September the 11th because oil industry goals were given the top priority in dealing with both the Taliban in Afghanistan and the Islamic fundamentalism of Saudi Arabia. The authors claim that FBI Director John O'Neill resigned in July 2001 over this very issue. Brissard claims that O'Neill told the writers the main obstacles to investigating Islamic terrorism were U.S. oil corporate interest. The book claims that the Bush White House was trying to strengthen the Taliban to gain access to huge Central Asian oil reserves via an Afghanistan pipeline. Those reserves were effectively under Russian control, and U.S. oil interests wanted to control them instead of the Russians. Trillions of dollars are at stake. The book claims that Bush operatives pressured the Taliban to agree to a deal that was very favorable to U.S. oil interests. They claim that at one point, these operatives told the Taliban, either you accept our offer of a carpet of gold, or we will bury you under a carpet of bombs. The September 11th attacks on the World Trade Center and the Pentagon happened within weeks after that. We need to investigate, using both the Senate and an independent special prosecutor, any possible ties between the September the 11th attacks and the Bush administration's pursuit of an oil industry agenda with the Taliban. We support the war completely in the aftermath of September the 11th, but we want to know what, if any, role the Bush White House and Big Oil played in the events leading up to those attacks. Other scandals may include a lack of anti-monopoly enforcement at the FCC under Michael Powell. Mr. Powell was appointed by Bush and seems to lack any desire to prevent total media control by big business. There is also Funeralgate. Did Bush, as governor of Texas, commit perjury about his relationship with the funeral company concerning governmental regulation of their activities? Many other subjects bear close examination. We need to start holding all government office holders accountable for their action. We cannot rely on big business-dominated government or big business-dominated media to regulate big business abuses. We need an independent special prosecutor law.
Well, that's our... That's how we feel, folks.
That is that's this week's column.
Yeah, and that's this week's column. If you want to read it, especially if you want to get the website links to the articles, they were quite long, but you can go to thespartexpositor.com. That's S-P-A-R-T-A, expositor, E-X-P-O-S-I-T-O-R.com, and you can read our column.
Mm-hmm. And then you just pop over to the column section on the toolbar, hit columns, and then you go down to, and you'll read...
Our names,
and then you just punch onto those, and our columns will pop up.
All three. Actually, the current column is on the very front page, too, uh-huh. at the very bottom of the front page as well.
Well, Steve, you know, this the Enron debacle and the connections between the Bush White House and Enron have gone back for many, many, many years.
Oh, absolutely. It goes way, way back.
And these people are obviously very close friends.
Oh, they are. The Enron officials and the Bush administration are full of personal friendships and long political ties and deep financial ties.
And the Bush administration...
And those ties are not over.
That's right. And the Bush administration has doing their very best to back away from Enron these last few months.
And along with the rest of the Republican Party. But let me point out a couple of things I picked up. You know, the current new chairman of the Republican National Committee...
Brassica.
Yes. Is an Enron lobbyist.
Currently. Still. And refuses to give that up, I hear.
Yes, he's refusing to give that up. He's making big bucks on
it. So in other words, he took donations from Enron...
While he was a politician.
While he was a politician, and he also works for them.
And now he works for them.
Now he works for them, and now
and he's also serving as a Republican. He's a lobbyist for Enron, and he's also the chairman of the Republican Party nationally.
Hmm. And Republicans think that this is perfectly okay.
Well, some of them don't, but not enough of them to stop him from being chairman of the Republican Party nationally.
Okay, to quote Rod Serling, imagine if you will.
Yeah.
If this was done by a Democrat, Steve.
Oh, the long knives
howling,
would be...
It would keep us up nights, the howling would be so loud.
The Republicans would be using their long knives on them.
Folks, you see, that's one of the big differences between Republicans and Democrats. It's a question of values.
Well, it is. There's something else here. The question of values, I could not see the chairman of the Democratic National Committee being in a situation of conflict of interest like that. And I also would not, if he was... Democrats would not accept it. They would drive him out of the office.
Exactly.
And, you know, this guy should not be chairman of the Republican Party and a lobbyist, a paid lobbyist for Enron. I mean, I think that's wrong. But it's all through the Republican Party. First of all, Bush has very, very close ties, and Frank...
Directly with Kinley.
Yes. And with all the rest of Enron. And it goes way, way back. Back in 94, Bush has recently said, back in 94, that he did not... get the support of Ken Lay when he ran for governor. Ann Richards got that support. That is nonsense.
It's not true.
It's not true. Ken Lay has refuted it. You can go to the Democratic National Party website, and you'll see an article that I posted up, a little blurb, that'll give you links to Ken Lay's statements at the Houston Chronicle. I believe we read those last week.
Right.
Okay, and it will tell you that Bush... received 10 times as much money from Ken Lay in 94 as Ann Richards. Okay. It goes back a lot deeper than that, but Bush is not the only one. His brother, Jeb Bush, governor of Florida, this week had a fundraiser conducted by a former executive with Enron.
Former president of Enron.
Yes. The guy before Ken
Lay. What Jeb Bush's office said about that particular little meeting? That was a lapse in judgment.
A lapse in judgment where Jeb received lots of money. Did he give the money back to those poor people who lost their jobs or those investors from Enron? Did he? No, he didn't.
I haven't seen any of it yet.
No.
And you know what's really unfortunate? They're going to have to go after this money, Steve.
The last donation that the Democratic Party received from Enron, which was just a month or so ago, they donated it back.
Right.
They donated it back to the victims of Enron.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the Republican Party did not do that.
Mm-hmm.
And Jeb Bush is not doing that.
I also don't see any of these executives coming forward and offering to give back the millions that they cleaned the employees out of. Do you?
No, none of them.
None of them. They're going to have to be dragged to court, kicking and screaming.
Right.
Because you know why? Because they're crooks.
Okay.
And to get crooks, you got to send the law after them. And do you think the Ashcroft Justice Department is going to be going after Enron with the kind of verb that a special prosecutor would? I don't think so, folks. And if you think that, well, maybe you better rethink some of those issues, because since Ashcroft has recused himself and he's going to turn all of his Enron investigations over to Thompson, the undersecretary,
who, by the way, was also a lawyer for Enron,
who was a lawyer who should recuse himself as well. This just screams. This debacle screams for a special prosecutor.
Hey, it goes deeper. You know Elizabeth Dole, Bob Dole's wife?
Right.
Running for Senate as a Republican in North Carolina? Guess who gave her a fundraiser back in September 20th?
Gee.
Ken Lay of Enron. The same guy that cleaned everybody else out. All these corporate executives did a lot of insider trading besides defrauding stockholders, okay, by overinflating their profits or hiding money in offshore things.
Over 800 of them,
which right. Clinton tried to do something about.
Right, that's right. He tried to... in fact, there was laws on the books that the Clinton administration had passed to bring some of these regulatory laws more into modernize them, so
to stop some of this
stuff. Yeah. Well, apparently, right after Bush came into office, he changed that immediately. His first month, and there's speculation that the reason he did that was to give Enron some breathing room.
That's absurd.
Okay, there's a story here from the Village Voice by James Ridgway that I have for you, and it's called Bush Gave Enron Some Breathing Room, just as I mentioned. Well, while the Bush administration is seemingly open to finding out what happened with Enron, its disclosures are somewhat selective, omitting Cheney's Energy Task Force and the role Enron played in framing White House energy policies, which depended largely on the increased production of natural gas at home and abroad. Natural gas is an underlying economic factor in Central Asia, for starters, and U.S. pipelines for the fuel were one of Enron's biggest hard assets. Well, one unexplored approach to unraveling the Enron scandal may lie in the company's use of offshore tax havens, which have scant bank disclosure laws. The company had 2,800 subsidiaries, over 800 of which were headquartered in nations like the Cayman Islands, you know, places like that, offshore accounts. Well, in a lengthy study of Enron by the Watchdog Public Citizens Group, which is a pretty good group, they argue that by stashing money in this myriad of subsidiaries, Enron could conceivably hide from a growing list of U.S. creditors and also hide from U.S. tax investigators. Indeed, Enron appears not only to have paid no taxes for four of the past 5 years, but due to this offshore money laundering, they've also makes them eligible for hundreds of millions of dollars in tax refunds.
That's absurd. Not only are they ripping off the investors, they're ripping off the U.S. Treasury.
The story goes on to say that under Clinton, the feds were making an effort to gain some information about some of these tax havens that, and how they were operating by joining with some of the other countries in the OECD, that's the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development. And they wanted to clamp down on some of these lax banking laws. Well, at first, Clinton Treasury Department named some of the offending countries and hoping to embarrass them into changing, but that didn't really work. Well, because... after Osama bin Laden's 1998 attack on the embassies in Kenya and Tanzania, there was this new urgency to start doing this. Well, 2 years later, the U.S. was able to negotiate a deal with Cayman Islands and some others to work on tightening their rules. Clinton threatened economic sanctions if they didn't move, and they were moving. Well, after the election with Bush, everything changed.
How so?
Less than a month after his inauguration, his Treasury Department announced the Clinton deals had been placed under review.
Oh. So they thought maybe it's not a good idea to tighten this offshore banking regulation.
And this, now you got to think about this also in the context that Enron policy, the Enron was already, Enron helped put Bush into the presidency through their campaign contributions, and they were a very big player in Bush energy policy, and this is right up their alley. Well, anyways, last spring the administration told the OECD that it wouldn't be going along with the Clinton agreements. Instead, on November 27th, just last year, in the gathering of the Enron scandal, a few days before the company formally filed for bankruptcy, Treasury Secretary Paul O'Neill said the Cayman Islands had agreed to start cooperating with U.N. investigators in the year 2004.
Well, so they give them a few years for them to complete their insider trading.
Right, exactly.
Okay, so they could sell out. Okay, because if this went in effect immediately like it was supposed to,
right,
the Bush administration had put it on hold, it would have been very difficult for them to continue to do all this insider trading.
In fact, Steve, some of that money might be able to get some of that money right now.
Yeah, but if they wait a couple of years, it can be
it's going to be transferred
and transferred and transferred and transferred.
That's right. The money is going to be already gone.
There's this thing in when you're doing money laundering, and drugs money is part of it, and also any other kind of illegal money like. Possibly some of this Enron stuff might be.
Well,
is they have this rule of five, and instead of transferring it to one directly where you want it to go, you run it through five other countries' accounts. That way, when they go to try to appeal it and trace it, it takes 3 to 4 to 6 months in each country. By then, it's years old and the money's gone.
Right, and that's exactly what's going to happen.
Yeah. And that's what it looks like.
And then they're going to use this same money to do something else just like it.
That or it may come back in the form of illegal campaign contributions and briefcases full of cash like it did in the Nixon era.
Well, Mr. Ridgway in the article, he asks the question, of course, is whether Bush undertook this change in offshore banking policy with Enron in mind. That could be answered by a congressional investigation. But with Enron at the center of the partisan battle, such a prospect is problematic at best, he says. The situation is clouded further by AG John Ashcroft having recused himself, and Congress, you know, Enron has got their hands pretty well into Congress's pockets. I tell you what, once again, this is just crying for a special prosecutor, Steve.
Absolutely does. Not only that, let's talk about a few more of these Enron ties.
Okay, Phil Graham.
Senator Phil Graham, okay. His wife Wendy,
all right,
is a paid lobbyist for Enron, is she not?
Yeah. A well-paid lobbyist.
Yes.
In fact, I think that the Grahams did pretty well selling Enron stock.
I believe they did. And as a matter of fact, I believe that Senator Graham, Republican from Texas, also did quite a bit of introduction of legislation that would favor Enron. So there may not have been any very easily provable quid pro quos with the Bush administration, although, you know, I think if we get digging deep, we'll find that there are some.
Well, but you know, there was
a
report in Public Citizen that Senator Graham got more than $260,000 in campaign financing, but there are some discrepancies about the amount, about how much money he got. But, you know, did he give them favorable legislation? I heard that he co-sponsored a bill was favorable to them.
According to the New York Times, okay, on January 18th of this year, Its bill shows complexity of power couples ties to Enron. Take a look at that. You'll find something there.
Okay.
I don't want to go too deep into this. Okay. This is New York Times, January 18th, 2000. Bill shows complexities of power couples ties to Enron. That's the article you're looking for, folks.
Okay, and you know, some folks might, okay, well, Al and Steve, what is the meaning of all this? What do you, you know,
there's
a
pattern to this.
Right.
There's
okay.
Lots of patterns
that's
to this.
That's right. That's what this is about.
A couple of the patterns I saw is, first of all, I don't think the Bush administration really is really opposed to insider trading. Frankly, if you go back and you look at George W. Bush's history as a oil man, there's allegations of insider trading against
throughout
him
his business career
before he was even a congressman.
Right.
Before he was elected to Congress.
Right.
I believe it was after he ran for Congress the first time, but before he was elected. In fact, he wasn't elected to Congress. He ran for Congress and was defeated. His first public office was actually as a Texas governor. It was before that. In this, he was able to sell his shares in this particular oil company at roughly $4 a share. Within a year, it became public that they were having financial troubles. The shares dropped to $2. It took him 8 months to file his Federal Security Commission filings, insider trading filing report, which is required by law immediately when you do that. He claimed, now to get this, he claimed that he did file it and they lost it.
Isn't that kind of like the dog ate my homework?
It's exactly like the dog ate my homework. I did it, I swear I did it, you lost it. You know, That's nonsense. First of all, we usually, anybody who knows anything about being a businessman, when you file something like that, you do it by certified or registered mail.
Of course. And, you know, I mean, isn't so you can this prove the president of integrity and truth, Steve?
He wasn't a very good will, man. Okay. Anyway, all those other investors lost millions of dollars. So if this is in his own background and his idea of being what an oil man is, maybe he thinks Enron didn't do anything wrong. I don't think that they're really against insider trading.
Bush's, they don't seem to be.
The money that he rounded up in the oil industry that helped him buy the baseball team in Texas Rangers.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, his particular personal contribution largely came from that.
Right.
Okay.
Profits from the oil company sale.
Exactly.
Right.
Now, you will, if you get, and you know where this came from, folks? This comes from a book by a writer named Molly Ivins, a great columnist. You can link her from our website.
Right.
If
in
you
fact,
want to go
I've
read
got
her stuff.
Her recent column that I'm going to read later on in the show.
Okay. Well, Molly is also available for any of you who want to. Go to our website, www.democratictalkradio.com. go to the link page and look under columnists. You'll find Molly Ivins there. It's worth reading every day.
Right.
Anyway, she had a book called Shrub, which I think is pretty funny.
This is long before the president...
This is actually before the election.
Before the election, right. This was during the campaign.
It was during the campaign the book came out.
She wrote it while he was governor.
And the media ignored it.
That's right.
The media ignored it, just like the media is largely ignoring the book by these French authors, Bin Laden, you know, The Hidden Truth.
Steve, they ignored it just like they ignored his character.
Yeah. They didn't look into his record. If you go back through his administration, you'll find over and over again, and Molly states this in other words, that he's always been a tool of big business. It's not that he was exactly corrupt in all of his dealings, but basically she says he just thinks whatever's good for big business is good for everybody.
America.
It's good for America. This man is a believer in a corporate America.
Right. And you know what? You know, sure, America's about business and commerce, and sure we are. Of course, that's what, you know.
But not big business.
But it's not all we're about, Steve.
It's also not big business.
Right.
America is about business, but it's about Main Street business. It's about the guy down here with a drugstore, a hardware store, a clothing store. You know, it's a small little plants that employ 30, 40, 50 people. Mm-hmm. You know, sure, there's some great giant industrial giants, but a lot of those industrial giants, the same people that Bush is really... had his whole career
wrapped
as a politician wrapped around, great defenders of, these guys don't have much loyalty to America.
Right.
They have loyalty to
the
dollar.
To the bottom line.
To the dollar. Or the Deutschmark or the yen. They don't really care. But it's the money. And it's not national loyalty. So that's why some of these guys will up and move a plant. Can you imagine what would happen to Fayetteville if Amana would be so disloyal as to move their manufacturing abroad?
Right.
It'd be un-American, but it would devastate our community.
Mm-hmm.
And it shouldn't be allowed to happen. If a company like Amana would move their plants abroad, they should no longer be able to sell their products in the United States. You know?
Right.
That's my personal opinion.
Mm-hmm.
We need somebody in the White House who holds similar opinions. We need somebody in the White House
who
says,
after America.
Hey,
right.
We're worried about the guy with the little store down the road. The guy's got a grocery store. You know, or the gas station. They need to worry about those guys instead of guys that are insider trading for millions and billions of dollars and ripping everybody off.
Well, I tell you what, I don't want America to be a big corporate society with big business pulling all the strings, Steve. And with republicanism, that's exactly what we get.
That is what Bush republicanism is about. I found a great article about a Republican primary conflict in California. Now, Cheney's going out here to defend this congressman. Okay, this congressman is a hard right wing guy named Doolittle. Okay, I didn't make that up, folks. It really is Doolittle, Congressman Doolittle from California, John Doolittle, is running against a guy whose name is Kirby, and this Kirby guy, Bill Kirby, is what they now call a moderate Republican, which means he's a Reagan Republican. Okay?
Isn't it funny? Because, you know, in Reagan's day, we used to call Reaganites conservatives.
Right. Well, they're not anymore.
I mean, conservatives.
John McCain is a conservative.
Funny.
This Kirby is a thing, but they're moderate Republicans. They're conservative Americans. Okay? They're Ronald Reagan Republicans. The other guys, these Bush guys, Doolittle and the rest of them, Cheney and the rest, they are corporate rightist.
Right. Extreme rightists.
They're extreme rightists. They are not... Bush Republicanism is not the Republican Party of Ronald Reagan.
It isn't.
It's a different ideology.
It isn't. And folks that have rallied around President Bush because of him just being a Republican...
Don't seem to understand that.
Are really being duped.
And here this guy, this Doolittle guy, is going to probably raise four or five or six times his money, but he's running scared. You know why he's running scared?
Why?
Because Kirby is actually getting the message out in the Republican Party that I'm a Reagan Republican, I'm moderate, and I don't go for all this extremism, and I don't go for all this being a tool of big business.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they got to run it scared. They got Cheney out there. Now, Cheney seems to be missing in action as vice president lately. I mean, really. You don't see him in the news. He's so closely tied to the Enron scandal.
That they're not letting him out of the box for nothing because he might run into a reporter.
But the only time that they are turning him loose, and it's pretty often, is to go raise money. Okay, the Republican Party is out raising money like crazy. They are not dealing with Enron. But
right.
they're out raising money,
they
and,
sure are.
And they are, you know, they're hiding from and running away from Enron wherever they can. But whenever there's a campaign dollar in it, they're right in Enron's pocket still to this day.
Mm-hmm.
And it's time for us to call us down on it. You know, you see all through the Bush administration. I'm doing this. I read a great thing in a website called GovernmentExec.com. GovExec.com. GovExec.com. And here, you know that this, get this. January 10th, Bush fires entire labor management relations panel. And then.
I heard a little something about. What's that about?
Well, it's.
Well,
it's,
go ahead.
It's just like what it says. There's a federal labor relations panel, so if there's a conflicts between workers and management in the federal government, okay, historically, he goes to this panel, and this is the resolution panel, very similar to the one that you worked with in Nevada.
Okay, right.
In Nevada,
yeah.
Very similar thing, and it deals with all the kinds of conflict. Well,
who did he get for this spot?
Well, there's all kinds of people. His actions really were irresponsible in this, but he went and dug up, guess this, Becky Norton Dunlap, Vice President of External Relations at the Heritage Foundation, to serve as on
that
the panel.
Heritage Foundation?
Exactly. Other
folks,
nominee, yeah.
The Heritage Foundation is a very right-wing, big business conglomerate.
Exactly.
Okay, and they're kind of like the Carlyle Group, only with more money.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, and then there's...
Very scary people. They're a think tank.
Right, and then he's got an executive of senior vice president of Northwest Airlines there, okay, and a bunch of other ones. They've filled it full of his party hacks. And you know what? These workers are not going to be able to get treated well under these kind of conditions.
No, they won't.
They're packing this. They're packing the Labor Relations Management Board with tools of big business. That's what they're doing.
And what those tools of big business are out to do are out to keep wages low, Steve, and increase their profits.
And more. It's outrageous for him to fire all seven members of this board.
You know, this administration is almost a shill for big business, Steve.
It's not. There's no almost to it.
It is. It's a shill for big business. I know that sounds pretty rough. You know, here we are, we got this conflict going overseas, Americans are threatened by terrorism, Steve, and we're criticizing the president.
Right, we are. We're criticizing him on his agenda of being a tool of big business, and being such a tool of big business that it may have helped create...
What's happening.
Folks, this is very serious,
it really is.
This isn't something,
this isn't gotcha from the Democratic Party, this is about our institutions of our government.
It is.
And who's running them.
And it's time for us to do something about this.
And it's really not about gotcha, because you know what? The Democrats really aren't interested in gotcha.
No.
The Republicans think that we are.
Because that's their style.
And some Democrats, and Steve, some Democrats are. And I can't, you know, even in the back of my mind, even a little part of me says, well, you know, what goes around comes around.
Well, I don't buy that.
But only because of the unjust way that they went after President Clinton.
Oh, they did. But the whole point is
folks,
I do not believe that you can compare these two scandals.
You can't. And that's why gotcha doesn't work here, because, man, I want nothing to do with any of that.
There's
this
millions
is so big,
of people who lost money.
Right, this is so
and
big.
And there's billions of dollars lost.
It's as big as it's almost as big as the election scandal.
Well, it's symptomatic of what's wrong with our entire government.
What's wrong with the Bush administration.
Exactly.
And Republicanism.
And Republicanism,
and the current Republicanism
that
got hold of the Congress in 1994 under the Gingrich auspices.
Right. This is not the Republicanism of Ronald Reagan or John McCain.
Folks, I want to tell you just a brief little story about what happened in 1992 when William Jefferson Clinton was elected president. Okay, not only was William Jefferson Clinton elected president in 1992, but the House of Representatives had a Democratic majority. And the Senate had a Democratic majority. Well, some very tough decisions were made in 1992 that had huge effects over the next 8 years, not only for Americans, but for the whole world.
Mm-hmm.
It was called the greatest economic prosperity that this country has ever seen. And the reason that happened, Steve, is because the Democratic Party bit the bullet. We got our fiscal house in order, and we raised taxes on the rich.
Well, the very wealthiest.
Okay, that's why we got our fiscal house in order. And as soon as commerce and banking started seeing that the U.S. government was getting their fiscal house in order, the money started flowing.
And here's something else. Even though the taxes were raised on the wealthiest Americans continue to have an increase in income well above everybody else.
Exponentially.
In absolute terms and in percentage terms. They thrived under it. They did not need this tax giveaway that Bush ran through.
What?
Yeah, that was political payoff to the wealthiest Americans in the nation.
Of the worst kind.
Right.
Of
the Enron type guys.
Of the worst kind, Steve.
And the guys like that control the media.
That's
the
right.
Big companies that do that.
And let me tell you something. The
General
American
Electric.
People are being duped to the tune of about $8 trillion.
Yeah, at least.
And this is the same group of people that want to take over Social Security, Steve.
Okay, now these are the same guys that also... Now, let me point out a few things for folks. The Bush administration is basically telling Congress that we're not going to give you any information on Enron, on our contacts with Enron. Now, you've got a specific allegation, we'll respond to it, but otherwise, we're not turning over what you're requesting.
Okay, now I know a little something about this. This comes from the Justice Department, doesn't it?
No, this actually is from Ari Fleischer.
Oh, okay. I'm thinking about the...
We'll talk about the justice thing. The justice thing goes this. That's when John Ashcroft, as Attorney General, 1 month to the day after the World Trade Center attacks, on the 12th, actually, one month and a day, put out a memo saying, get this, folks, federal agencies should not cooperate with Freedom of Information Act requests.
That, right.
They should make it as difficult as possible. And frankly, I believe that's against the law, and I do believe that he needs to be
unconstitutional.
Well, it's
maybe
he's his top law enforcement official in the nation. That's what the Attorney General's title is. He's supposed to enforce the law, not urge federal government and federal agencies to resist it, to thwart it, to try to find ways around it. He should not only be requiring them to comply with the letter of the law, but also with the spirit of the law.
That law,
including the White
change
House.
Of policy, became effective October the 12th.
Right. And Ari Fleischer's comments here are saying, we're not going to give you guys any information to dig out what's happening to Enron.
Right.
There's one thing I've heard them throwing up a lot, too. Besides this issue, is I hear a lot of people saying Enron gave to Democrats too. They did to a few, almost solely Texas congressmen. Okay, but I want to point out something. In 2002, okay, what Enron gave as their donations went 94% to the Republicans, 6% to the Democrats.
94-6. Okay, not Albert Einstein, but which number is bigger?
94-6.
Okay.
Now, if my math is not mistaken, that's slightly 15 times as much to Republicans as to Democrats. 15 times. This percentage seems to have gotten bigger over time. Now, before Bush became governor of Texas, Enron's donations to Republicans and Democratic parties were much smaller in total, but were roughly equals, with just a slight tilt towards the Republicans.
Our worst fear is that the Bush administration is going to run our economic policy and our energy policy just because, you know, everybody, the Bush administration, hey, the Enron company is the model. It was the model, okay? And they still look at it as the model. For what? For making money?
For gouging the public.
For what? Making money? That's not why we have government. They're not supposed to make money. I mean, granted, they make money, but not for themselves.
Enron didn't
not
make
for their
any
special
money.
Interests.
Enron did not make any money for its stockholders.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, they did not. They made money for the guys on the inside running it. But if you were a little guy and invested in Enron, you lost your shirt.
I want to talk for just a while we have a few minutes, a little bit about... Vice President Cheney, you know, he's been pretty silent about all this Enron thing, Steve.
Yeah.
And I got this out of the LA Times just the other day. Well, the growing Enron debacle is turning up some political heat on Vice President Dick Cheney. And as you mentioned, he's going out to California. Well, he's refused to detail his contacts with company officials while he's developing a national energy policy last year. Of course, Democrats have been charging that he granted Enron undue access and produced in secret an industry-friendly plan.
That's outrageous, isn't it?
Cheney's unyielding stance has hampered the Bush administration's efforts to distance itself from the scandal.
Well, that's why Cheney's been so distant.
Right, he's refusing.
Well, not only that, he's staying out of the limelight because they don't want this to be an issue.
You know,
and it is an issue.
He invoked executive privilege.
Yeah. Well, as far as I'm concerned, the vice president is not the chief executive, is he?
Well, it's kind of hard to tell with these two sometimes.
Well, you know, I think they both seem to be asleep on the job, but that's my personal opinion. That's not, you know, anything. Cheney should turn over, and the White House should turn over every bit of information they have on Enron.
He's going to have
every
to,
bit.
Steve. Eventually, he's going to have to. Why doesn't he just do it now?
Because I don't think they think they have to. I think what they're going to do
that's
is Congress is
says.
Going to say is that Congress will eventually demand it. They may still refuse it. Then it goes to the courts.
Right.
Well, you know, it seems to be the federal courts and the Bush administration the fix is in. Republican judges at that level do not seem to care about the law. And that's my personal...
They seem to care about the political agenda.
They do. These are political judges and they're hacks. And they go all the way to Clarence Thomas and Scalia.
Boy, you know, Steve,
the White House.
A lot of Democrats have been asleep at the wheel for a little while.
Well, we're not sleeping anymore, folks. We know what's
because
going on, and we are not going to be silent.
We've been, you know, the Republican Party did a pretty good job over the last years of keeping the focus on President Clinton and his puny scandals comparatively to this.
And, you know, they're also saying that the White House didn't do anything at all, okay, anything at all to help Enron. But that's not true. Not only does their tax...
Look at the energy policy, man.
Look at the energy policy. And you talked about how they were dealing with offshore banking.
Right.
Right. Well, what about doing away with Reagan's alternative minimum tax on corporations? Okay.
To the tune of $250 million? Is that what they were going to give?
$284. I've heard different numbers, but that's the ballpark of it. Over a quarter of $1 billion.
Bucks, right.
Okay. Now, also...
I wonder who would have gotten that money.
Okay, also between the Enron has also used the White House to go out and try to collect debts on a power plant in India. Okay, Enron received $2.4 billion for overseas energy projects between 1992 and the year 2000 from the Overseas Private Investment Corporation, the Export-Import Bank of the United States, in the form of loans and insurance and guarantees. And this is from the Washington Post. January 18th.
Wow.
Okay. It's White House aided Enron in dispute. Okay. Cheney and others intervened over Indian power plant.
Did you hear the latest CBS poll?
What?
Just came out. It was just done between January the 15th and the 17th. It says here, almost two-thirds of Americans in a brand new CBS News poll think that the Bush administration is either hiding something or lying about its relationship with Enron. Two-thirds of Americans.
Well, here, check this out. Bush's top economic advisor, also in the same article from the Washington Post, Lawrence B. Lindsay, earned $100,000 as an Enron consultant in 1999 and the year 2000. Now, he's the top economic advisor to the White House. That's Lindsay. Tell me these guys are not in bed together.
I mean, they are chained up like a link fence.
It is unbelievable. And it's just not... If you go out and surf on the Internet, now, you're going to have a hard time finding some of this stuff because it'll be in one little newspaper here and another there.
Right.
But they're not repeating it on cable news network.
On the big... Right. They're not touching this. Because you know what? These large corporations are probably... Their interests are being challenged, Steve.
Well, you know what? It goes everywhere. All levels of government. Former president of Enron de Mexico quit as head of the Texas Public Utilities Commission 7 months after being appointed by Governor Rick Perry, Republican. Okay, that was the top Texas utility regulator. Okay, it goes on and on. You know, Texas prosecutors are disqualified from probe by personal ties. That's in the Washington Post. Let's see, that would be January 19th. You know, it's an interesting thing. What do you think, Al?
Well, you know, the Enron thing is just going to keep getting deeper and deeper. And, you know, the Bush administration has been getting some pretty good advice from Democrats and some Republicans that what they need to do is call disclosure, folks. If whatever they have about Enron, they need to release this immediately. That's why the longer they wait, the more the special prosecutor is going to be digging even deeper.
Well, you know, we just don't have an independent special prosecutor law.
Right. It's going to have to go through the Congress. Right. That's right.
It's time to bring it back. It's time for all of us as citizens to demand to our congressmen and our senators, whether Republicans or whether Democrats or you know, anything else out there, just get out there and say, hey, we want an independent special prosecutor. We do not trust politicians to regulate themselves. Now, if we should be a way to call in checks, political hacks who become special prosecutors like Kent Starr did.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there should be a way to call those guys down, but this is ridiculous.
This is very threatening.
And we need Senate hearings, and we also need a special prosecutor.
Special prosecutor. Right now.
Right now.
Okay. I'm going to change speech just a little bit, Steve, and I wanted to read Molly Ivan's latest article to our folks because she is just such a talented lady. And
yeah,
she,
great way to close the program.
She really has her.
And I also want to plug her book, Shrub.
That's right. It really is a great book. You can go to your any bookstore, and they'd be more than happy to order it.
Yeah, there's several good ones in town.
Okay, this is her latest article posted January the 17th, Austin, Texas. There's something happening here. What it is ain't exactly clear. It's time we stop, children. What's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Buffalo Springfield, if that rings any bells for you. In New York City last year, about 3,000 people died in the attack on the World Trade Center in New York City last year. 30,000 people came to the new federal limits on welfare. Another 19,000 will lose assistance this year. New York has lost 95,000 jobs since September the 11th. It lost 75,000 jobs in the year before that. There are now 30,000 people in the city shelters. Now find the numbers for your town. In Austin, the only organization that provides help to women with breast cancer and no health insurance has just cut its staff from 30 to 6. With an equal impact on the help that can be offered, homelessness is up, food distribution centers are overwhelmed. And all this is happening in a cruel synergy of inattention, indifference, and the final fraying of the social safety net. Charities are overwhelmed and suddenly vastly underfunded, in large part as a consequence of the complete focus on the victims of September the 11th. The federal government, largely under Republican control, is dealing with war, terrorism, and recession. State governments, with far less attention, are out of money, running into deficits, cutting services across the board. Texas, with another year to go before the biannual budget battle, is declaring it can no longer afford its small share of the federal Children's Health Insurance Program. At the beginning of the 1990s, the states raised their taxes, and toward the end of the 90s, they cut their taxes. But the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities reports that they didn't cut the same taxes that they'd raised. Increases in regressive taxes, that is, taxes like the sales tax, which bear mostly heavily on lower and moderate income families, by and large, were never reversed. Instead, states cut taxes that bear most heavily on upper income families. This is reported by Paul Krugman. The end result was a redistribution of the tax burden away from the haves towards the have-nots.
Yeah, well, most people in Tennessee are have-nots.
Right. The family earning, say, $30,000 per year pays considerably more in state taxes than a family the same constant dollar income did in 1990, while a family earning $600,000 per year pays considerably less. Now, we here in Tennessee know that very well.
Yes, we do. But the story is fairly common in the whole country.
It's common throughout the whole country. It is. But no attention is being paid to this. The media, with their one big story obsession, just got off the war in Afghanistan long enough to start reporting on Enron. Well, and there is something else happening as well. 38% of the tax cut of last April, 38% of the tax cut of last April went to benefit the wealthiest 1% of taxpayers. We're at a curious point in our political debate where anyone who points that out is accused of fomenting class warfare, actually reporting that the wealthiest 1% got 38% of the benefits is not fomenting class warfare. Passing a tax cut that gives 38% to the wealthiest 1% is fomenting class warfare.
I agree.
Likewise, proposing an economic stimulus package, of which 92% of the benefits are tax cuts for huge corporations, is fomenting class warfare.
Right. That 38% will be over 45% when that happens.
And they have the audacity to even mention class warfare. See, they're using psychological tricks, Steve, to bamboozle people, and it's working. And it has worked, but that's stopping right now.
Yeah, it's stopping. We're not going to be
silent.
You know. We're going to get this message out, no matter what.
I'm almost out of time. I want to finish this. And this is a country that needs to be a little nervous about class warfare as economic pain bites in. Medicaid, the health insurance program for the poor, is in a fiscal crisis. According to the New York Times, overall medical spending went up 11% last year, just as states face huge deficits. We live in a society in which bad stuff flows downhill, and the people on the bottom are drowning in it. This is not a story to which the corporate media is going to pay attention to, though, because bad demographics don't attract advertisers. It's not upbeat. It's not patriotic. Too busy with Russell Crowe's love life. As anyone who's involved in raising money for a nonprofit organization these days knows, the flying bombs that hit on September the 11th also landed on every helping organization in America with a huge impact. Budgets, staff, services, facilities, all slashed. And at the top, those with the power, those who make the decisions, are too far away to even see what's happening in the streets, insulated by multiplying multiples of their incomes. After 6 years as governor of Texas, George W. Bush was infuriated by a federal report ranking Texas number one in hunger. This is what George said. You'd think the governor would have heard of if there are pockets of hunger in Texas. He said, well, Texas had been number one in hunger since the Fed started keeping count in the 1960s. It's a permanent condition here, but the governor's never seen it.
Sad.
Better stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down.
Well, we don't have a whole lot of time left in our show.
We are out of time. I've gone over our allotted time a little bit. I apologize for that, but I get a little fired up when Molly gets me going sometimes.
Okay.
You've been listening to Democratic Talk Radio. My name is Al Lawrence.
And Steve Crockett. Until next week.
Steve, anything you want to close with before we go?
I think we'll be back here with plenty more next week.
That's right.